If I were starting a company in 2024, I honestly don't know what I'd do because there are so many good opportunities out there these days. And my biggest struggle when it comes to thinking about how I want to grow my business, what I want to try, what new business maybe I want to start is always just narrowing it down, figuring out which opportunity to pursue out of all the opportunities that are out there. And that is a beautiful problem to have. But what we're going to talk about in this episode is kind of a hypothetical of a business that I might start in 2024. One of the options that I've looked at that has a lot of potential that I see a lot of my colleagues being really successful with, and that is very appealing to me for quite a few reasons. So if you want to hear my thoughts on what business I'd start if I were starting a new business, then keep on listening. We became entrepreneurs because, more than anything, we want freedom. We want to be in control of our own schedule, income, and life. But unfortunately, that isn't always the reality of being a business owner. I'm Gillian Perkins, and I'm on a mission to take back entrepreneurship for what it's supposed to be. In every episode, I'll share with you how to get the most out of every hour you work so that you can work less and earn more. Let's get to it.
I'm excited to get into this conversation with you today because I'd love to pick your brain about what you would do if you were to start a company in 2024. Let's talk a little bit about what I see as scarcity mindset, where entrepreneurs feel like they've missed the boat or they missed the wave. There's not as much opportunity. But now, what do you see in the online space? Do you see just as much opportunity as when you started your company?
Absolutely. You know, when I started my company, it was probably 6 or so years ago now, and there was already a lot of competition, and there were people at that time saying that it was too late, saying that the market was already saturated, saying that there were too many brands to compete with, and things have changed and evolved since then, and there are more players in the online game today than there were at that point in time, but things have also gotten a lot more niched and a lot more kind of separated, segregated. And so people have kind of like found their space online. And so now, for example, let's take the make money online industry space niche. Well, with that industry, people used to be much less informed consumers to where they were just like following anyone who talked about how to make money online. But now people have more information. They're more informed buyers. They're more informed decision makers. And they're more aware of these different ways you could make money online. And so with that more sophisticated market, kind of increased opportunities for individual brands and experts to specialize and to serve these different markets at higher capacity, at higher levels, and to earn higher rates. So while it might be a little bit more difficult today to serve the mass market, because the customers have become more sophisticated, it's easier than ever to niche down and to serve a smaller group of people at a higher level.
That makes sense. Now, in the beginning, you were talking a little bit about how you had that thought, is there enough room for me to move into this online space? How did you overcome that initially?
So one of the things actually that helped me right at the beginning was that I wanted to build an audience. I wanted to start just reaching people for free on YouTube. And for quite a while, I thought, oh, it's probably too saturated. There's probably too much competition. But there was this certain point in time when I had quit my first YouTube channel, but I really wanted to succeed on YouTube. So I spent about 18 months, kind of, as I say, like in the bat cave, you know, studying the YouTube algorithm, trying to figure out exactly how it ticked, how it worked, how I could succeed with it. Were there predictable indicators of successful channels versus channels that failed? And one of my biggest takeaways, as simple as it is, you know, there were a lot more things that were more complex or nuanced or things like that. But big broad takeaway was that I was like really hard pressed to find any channels that had simply just good quality videos. And I don't mean like incredible storytelling or anything like that. I just mean like the camera actually looked good. The shot looked good. The video quality itself just looked good. And they were posting consistent videos. Hard pressed to find any channels like that that weren't either already big or quickly growing. That gave me so much confidence that if I could just learn basic skills of how to make a basically good video and consistently post, then my channel would grow. and that it didn't have to be so dependent on things like personality or wit or unique information or anything like that. That if I just made these basically good quality videos and stuck to it, then I would be able to grow an audience. And if you can grow an audience, then you have amassed a group of people who are all interested in learning something. They all maybe have a similar problem or a similar goal in mind, and you will be able to find something that you can sell them and make money at.
I love that. So looking back to how you got started then, now do you see any market trends or just business trends in general right now that are different from when you started that you would maybe do things differently?
As more competitors have entered the market, as there is more noise online, the quality of the content has become increasingly important, and the standard of quality definitely has gone up in the past 5 years. Certainly when you look at the past, say, 20 years, like when you look at the original YouTube videos that were being posted, they are horrible quality by today's standards. I mean, even just like something as simple as the number of pixels, right? Much, much lower back then because camera technology has advanced so much. But the good news is that as camera technology and other sorts of like recording technology and AI and all these things have advanced, they've also gotten cheaper. So back in the day, YouTube's early days, it cost hundreds, thousands of dollars to have a decent camera. Today, most of us have a camera better than any of the biggest YouTubers had back then in our pockets, right? We've all already got it in our cell phone. And the same goes when it comes to like a recording mic for a podcast. You can record a podcast on your cell phone and it can sound pretty darn good. It can sound plenty good enough to stand up in today's market. You can use AI for free as an assistant to help you build your business, right? These things are available at such ridiculously low costs that is now the basic standard of quality. That doesn't mean though that it's now so easy to stand out, right? We still have to put in the effort because that's now the basic standard of quality. So to stand out, to attract the audience, to grow a brand in 2024 and beyond, you have to put in more of your own personal effort in the storytelling, in the information, make better quality content than your competitors are if you want to grow that audience and make the money.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And we have so many different tools now available to us, which is really, really great. So let's dive into what it would look like for you to create a new company in 2024. Have you thought about that at all and what that would look like?
Oh, absolutely. I am one of those people who just have a new business idea every other day and just has to constantly stop myself from going after all of them and, you know, remind myself over and over again to stay focused on the one business that I'm already building because, well, here's the thing about business growth. It tends to be that kind of hockey stick phenomena where it's slow and steady, slow and steady. And as time goes on, it snowballs and it grows exponentially. So for that reason, it's important that once you find a business that you want to work on, that you keep working on it because you'll see the most success 5-10 years into building that company. Especially in those first couple of years, you can feel like you're not making much of any traction. So it can be really tempting to switch. But most likely, with any business you start, you might see some initial success. You know, sometimes you get traction initially and you see a little bit of an uptick, but most of the time, either after that or right from the very start, you're going to see a long, slow plateau where you're just barely growing until you finally start to really get the traction and your company gets enough momentum that it can grow to be a big, successful, like multi-million dollar company.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So you were talking about how you have all these ideas. And I think as entrepreneurs, we're visionaries. We have all these ideas. How do you stick with that one? Or how do you know when it's time to branch off and create something new?
Yeah, well, I did a video I'll just reference a couple months ago now about three of the most important factors when it comes to sticking with it long term. So check that out on YouTube if you haven't watched that one already. Because I was interviewing Sarah Noked with the OBM School. She's been running her company for over 10 years, creating content, doing email marketing, all of those things. It can be really difficult to sustain those things long term. So she had some important insights about some of the things that really have played into her being able to maintain her success long term. So an idea I was talking about in a recent video was the idea that the most important thing is that you're always working on something. So the worst place to be is in the I should start a business stage when you don't already have a business. It's a little bit like when people are trying to get a job and they don't have a job. It's a lot easier to get a job when you have a job. You don't feel that scarcity and you can like the new potential employer sees on paper, oh, this person is able to hold down a job. They are making money, right? It makes you look more desirable on paper. Well, a similar sort of phenomena happens when you're starting a business. As long as you don't have a business, you can be really stuck in this mindset of I should start a business, but also feeling like maybe you aren't fully equipped. Maybe you're not smart enough. Maybe you don't have the resources. Maybe you don't know how. As soon as you start working on it, there's two things that happen. One is you are making progress, right? That's good. You're making progress on something. That's going to get you a lot further. But even if it's the wrong business idea, it's going to get you so much further to be working on something where either that is the right business idea or you discover this isn't the right business idea so you can switch to a different one, try a different one out. It's also going to do so much for your mindset because now suddenly you're a person who runs a business. You're a person who takes action on their dreams. You're a person who's working towards their goals, right? It'll be an upward spiral that leads you to higher and higher levels of success. And so aside from the mindset, it also just means that you are testing business ideas. So if we want to see this forward progress, then we need to be working on something. So always be working on something. And then as far as when it comes to like, well, should I switch business ideas, right? I think you can ask yourself a few simple questions like, am I enjoying this? Do I want to be doing it long term? Am I making some progress at all? I'd say if the answer to those two questions is yes, then keep working on it. Because realistically, most business ideas that people have the potential to be multi-million dollar companies. Now, there's lots of bad business ideas out there as well. So that's why it's really important that you do like test your business idea, that you do some market research, that you validate it, that you talk to other people about it. But once you have a reasonable degree of certainty that there is demand in the market for your business idea, there is so much likelihood, like the chances of you being able to turn this into a highly successful, highly profitable, even multi-million dollar business really is so high that you will be just shooting yourself in the foot to switch businesses if you're doing it because of what you perceive as like the chances of success versus what you truly want. So if you're running the business that you most want to be running, keep doing that. If you think there's something else that you might want to be doing more, I would say try that out. Consider that like your side hustle for a little while. A lot of the time, it just seems appealing because it's new and fresh and you're not yet aware of the problems associated with that business. So because you're in the weeds with your business, you're running against all these obstacles. The other thing, you're only seeing kind of the shiny outside of it. But once you get through that honeymoon phase with it, you'll find out, oh, it has just as many problems as my current business idea.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Recently, I recorded a brand new podcast mini-series called The 100K Method. Now, this podcast series is not something that I am adding new episodes to every week. I designed it as a complete whole. It's just 10 episodes long, and it is going to teach you everything you need to know about the 100K method, which is the system that I use to generate passive income with my online courses. So in short, the 100K method is a complete automated sales funnel system. So it includes everything from how you attract customers into your business, how you warm them up, to how you ultimately close the sale. Like I said, it's a fully automated process, so you don't have to be involved with doing things like sales calls or closing people in the DMs or anything like that to sell your online course. We've installed the 100K method into hundreds of course creators' businesses at this point in all sorts of different industries and niches to sell courses on every topic under the sun. And it is crazy how consistently it works and how passively it works. So if you are looking for a new strategy for selling your online course that is both effective and also does not require you to be hands-on with the sales process, then I would love to invite you to listen to the 100K method. Like I said, it's only 10 episodes long. Of course, it's completely free. I'm going to be leaving a link to the podcast series in the description below this episode so that you can find it and listen to. You can just go through, download all the episodes, and then just binge listen to it. I know a lot of the time I have trouble with starting new podcasts because I'm not sure whether I should start with the most recent episode or the first episode or somewhere in the middle. But with this series, you're not going going to have to make that decision because it will be super obvious. You should just start with episode one, listen all the way through, and then you'll know how to start selling your online course a whole lot more effectively and take it up to $100,000 a year, which is really the whole goal of the 100K method. So again, you can find the link to that series in the show notes below, or just open up whatever podcast player you like to use and search for the 100K method, and you should be able to find it.
So as far as the business, what would you do differently going into a new business? Would it look the same? Would it look different? Would you be in the online digital space? Would you try something new? What would you do, Gillian?
Yeah, well, there's so many different options. I'll tell you what I probably wouldn't do would be to start a local business again. Now, that's not because there's not tons of potential for local businesses. There really is. Both businesses that sell physical products, like a retailer, as well as service businesses. In fact, there's increasingly opportunity for service businesses. I don't know if you've heard about this, but people are not going into the trades at nearly the rate that they used to. Everyone wants to start like an online business or something that sounds easier. And so the number of people who are becoming plumbers or electricians or things like that are increasingly low. And so there's a lot of opportunity there to start like a plumbing company. So that's not why I wouldn't do a local business. I just love the flexibility and the freedom that comes with the online business. I love the low overhead. When I ran a local business, I felt like it wasn't a very good fit for my personality type, where I tended to get stressed out. And this was definitely something that, especially in retrospect, it was an opportunity for learning and for growth. But at least at the time, I just found that higher overhead to be quite stressful and quite like, when you have a lot of freedom and flexibility and low stress, you can think very kind of like outside the box and be very creative. It really limited my creative thinking to have that higher overhead and feel like, oh, I have to make sure I hit this profit or this revenue goal every month to be able to pay the bills. And so I love the added like creativity and lightness that comes with the online business. Probably the main thing that I would do differently if I was starting a business today, and again, like caveat here, I'll get into that in a moment, but I'd probably go for something where I am selling a more expensive product. The products that I sell today are generally on the more affordable side because I have this broader audience. I serve a broader community and I serve them in a more general way. And I help a lot of people get started with their businesses, which is incredible. And I'm saying this, you know, to a different version of myself, I guess, because of course there's a reason that I'm not just jumping out there and starting a different company that sells more expensive products, right? Because I really want to serve those people who are just starting out with their businesses and helping them get to $100,000 a year in revenue. But if that wasn't the case, in another universe where I'm not focused on that goal, you really can generally make more money more easily if you are selling a more expensive product. So I think about starting things like YouTube agencies or podcast agencies or doing consulting with larger companies and things like that.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about branching out into different agencies and whatnot. I know you have a big team already with Gillian Perkins International. And so I'd love to hear what would be the motivation behind the agencies? Would it free you up a little bit, or what is something that it would do for you, you think?
So one thing that I love about the agency model is that it is within the service business industry. What I really like about that is that you can have the satisfaction of successfully delivering the result to your customer. My business is in the education industry. So I teach people, and I've always worked in the education industry. I used to run a music school and be a music teacher, and then I segued into this business that I have today, and I teach people entrepreneurship and how to start a business. And the biggest frustration there, although this is definitely just always an area for growth, and this is always a question that we're asking at Startup Society and at Gillian Perkins International, is, you know, how can we help the customers get better results? How can we take this course and optimize it so that we can get the people who buy it to use it, right? And to complete it and to get the desired result. And that's a really fun challenge, but it is a challenge. And so as someone who finds a lot of satisfaction in like a job well done and in other people being satisfied with the thing that I've delivered to them, the idea of delivering a finished product to people, I think would bring me a lot of satisfaction. The other thing that's really cool about the agency model is the scalability of it, right? Because it's not dependent on you as a solopreneur or freelancer, but instead the team delivering the results. You as the owner can be more the business manager and less focused on doing the client work yourself. And so there's just a huge potential there to scale to multi-millions.
And what would you see yourself doing if you were the owner of the agency? Would you be focused on content creation? Where would your focus lie?
I'm absolutely a visionary at heart when it comes to that visionary integrator dynamic. And if you're not familiar with that concept, the book Rocket Fuel explains that really well. Explains how there's two different kinds of entrepreneurs. On the one hand, you've got the visionary. On the other hand, you've got the integrator. And the integrator is the person who is better at managing kind of the day-to-day aspects of the business and keeping the business a smoothly running machine, making sure that projects get finished. The visionary is the person who like comes up with the new ideas, who starts the new projects, and who charges for it and who leads the team in that capacity. And when I first realized this dynamic after reading that book for the first time, I just immediately recognized, oh, wow, I'm a visionary. And that's like all my problems in my businesses are coming from the fact that I am so poor at those integrator skills. And so I immediately went out there and hired an OBM, an online business manager, to be my integrator and to run those day-to-day operations in my company. And I mean, my business growth just like took off like a rocket. I went from being like stuck at a plateau to suddenly, you know, 10xing the size of my business over the course of a year or two. So if I was to start an agency type business, I would absolutely be in that visionary role. I love creating content, but for the sake of the business being able to scale as effectively as possible, ideally, I definitely would hire people to create content because that is an area that is a bottleneck in my business, is that as the chief content creator, the CCC, yes, the CCC in the business, right? And in addition to the CEO, that means that our ability to market the business is limited by my time and my energy and my capacity to create content, like even like my intellectual capacity and those types of things, right? And so a big change that I've been working on making in our company is to build the team out, the content creation team, so that it's not so dependent on me. So that even if most of the time I'm the face on the camera, there's a lot going on behind the scenes and I have more support in that area. So if I were to run an agency, you know, I would be that visionary leader. I'd kind of be like the Steve Jobs of the company, who is the face of the company, a little bit at least, and is making those ultimately those forward-facing strategic decisions. But I'd also have that integrator role who is managing the day-to-day operations, managing the people, and I'd also have the content creation team.
Love it. So as far as the business that you have right now, are there any trends that you've seen, anything, even with the agency model that you've been thinking about, that you would love to, as a visionary, add into your business at some point? Have you thought about that?
Well, I alluded to a few of those things with like building out the content creation team. Content marketing is one of the main ways that we market our products. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is because it really works well with the current market, to where like people really like consuming content these days, and it works really well to attract to the right target market, the right potential customers to your business. But then at the same time, we see that as content marketing has become increasingly popular, it's also become increasingly competitive, right? The content that people are creating is coming at these higher and higher quality standards, which is great. You know, that's great for the consumer. And as business owners and content creators, it's really challenging us to do better and better, which is good for the market overall. But it also means that you have to be more strategic about it. You have to, I'll say, try harder in a very general sense. That doesn't necessarily look like more hours put in, but it does mean you have to be more intentional about what you're creating and think about how you can create something even better than you created yesterday.
So let's go back into starting the business. So if you were to start a new company in 2024, maybe it's an agency, maybe it's something else, what would be the first couple of steps that you would take?
So before I did anything like registering the business or even opening a bank account or anything like that, kind of your traditional like start a business steps, or if you look up on your local government website, how to start a business in Oregon or whatever area you live in, you'll find steps like that. But I think that while those steps are important for officially starting the company, it's important to first like make sure that your business idea is valid, that there is demand for the thing that you're thinking about selling, because otherwise you'll just wind up wasting your time doing those steps on an idea that's not going to pan out. So absolutely the first step after coming up with a concept for a product is to get out there in the market and test it. The idea here is that we want to ship the product as soon as possible. Get something that we can try to sell and try to sell it and see how that goes. Most of the time, I'd say that the first time around, the first time you try to sell something, you might not get much of a reaction. You might not get much success. That doesn't mean that there's not demand, though. That means you haven't learned how to sell it yet. So there's these two different things you're trying to learn. And this first stage of starting a business is such a learning stage. Like that is the whole goal. It's not to make a certain amount of money or to grow the company in some way. It's really just for you to learn, is there demand for this thing that I want to sell, first of all? And second of all, how can I sell it? Like what message do people respond to? What message causes people to be interested and to choose to buy the product or get on the wait list or whatever you're offering right then? Once the product was validated, then I would move on to those business basics type step. I call that setting up shop. So there's a thing like registering your business name and opening that business bank account, setting up some accounting software for your business. All those things that are going to create that really practical foundation for the business so that you don't start like building a business and then find out that you've kind of gotten yourself into a bit of a between a rock and a hard place with your taxes or something like that, right? You want to make sure that you've got everything organized.
And as far as tools go, is there anything that you'd either incorporate sooner in your business that you used in the beginning but didn't incorporate fast, or any new tools that you would absolutely use right away?
Yeah, so a few of the tools I think are really important when you start a new business are a website, but don't spend too much time on that. Having a website, really good asset, okay, good place to point people to who might be interested in your business, makes you look more legit. So it's important, but I think some people, it's a little bit of a rabbit trail for them. I was probably one of those people where I spent probably a few hundred hours working on getting my website just right. I mean, keep in mind, this was like 5 or 10 years ago. So we didn't have things like Squarespace, Wix, or different tools like that. So I was doing it on WordPress, and WordPress was a lot harder back then. But even still, with these easier tools, people still can spend way too much time on even their Squarespace website, okay? Because if you think that having a great website is going to make or break your business, then of course you're going to spend a lot of time on it. But it's not. There are other things that are far more important. That's just kind of one of those like basic foundational pieces. As far as software goes, aside from the website itself, email marketing software early on, highly recommend it. As soon as people start coming to your website, you want to start to make connections with those people. What you don't want is to do all of the work to get the visibility, to advertise your business, have people visit your website, then leave, because that's what people do, right? They get distracted, they leave, and just completely forget about you. Then your hard work has gone to waste. So we need some sort of way to preserve that connection that we make with these new visitors to the website. A lot of the time, that's some sort of opt-in form. And the way that you'd set that up is to have an email marketing software so that you can put a form on your website where people can sign up to learn more about, you know, future product launches or to sign up for a free resource or something like that. So that's really important. And then another tool would be, I think social media is a really important part of growing a business. Not to say you can't grow one without it. You absolutely can. People have been doing it for thousands and thousands of years, right? But if you're not using social media, most likely you're going to be building more of a local business, which again, nothing wrong with that at all. But just like keep in mind, you know, if you want to be building an online business, you're going to need to connect with people online. And that's really what social media is. It's a way to connect with people online. That doesn't mean you have to be on TikTok. Do you know what I mean? That's one way to connect with people, but you can also connect with people on LinkedIn or in Medium or in a Facebook group. There's so many different ways. So basically, the most important thing here is that when you're starting your business and as you are figuring out what tool and platforms, et cetera, you want to use, you know what problem you are solving for your target customers. So that will enable you to design the product. That's what's going to drive how you test the product. It's definitely going to influence which platforms you decide to be on and which mediums you choose to use for content you create, whether you choose to use paid advertising. All of those different decisions will be dictated or at least strongly influenced by your understanding of exactly what that problem is that you're solving for people.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Work Less, Earn More. Now, here's what I want you to do next. Take a screenshot of this episode you're listening to right now and share it out on your Instagram stories. And when you do, make sure you tag me at Gillian Z. Perkins so I can see you're listening. Sharing on stories is going to help more people find this podcast so they too can learn how to build their business in a way that allows them to work less and earn more. And if you really love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts right now and leave Work Less, Earn More a review to give it a boost and help even more people find it. Okay, let's wrap this up. I'm Gillian Perkins, and until next week, stay focused and take action.